You're listening to the Great Recruiter Training Podcast. Here we go. Hosted by industry expert, trainer, and motivator, Scott Love.
This is episode 3 of the Great Recruiter Training Podcast, and my name is Scott Love. Thanks for joining me. The one word on everybody's mind in the industry, it's not recession, it's not recovery, it's not LinkedIn, it's client. The focus right now on your desk should be on your client development. In fact, you should never lose that focus. One of the things I learned the easy way from Tony Byrne by watching his videos when I first got in the business, when everybody else was watching Matlock episodes during lunch, I would sit in the break room and watch Tony Byrne videos. And I learned that he always would say, always be marketing. When you don't need business, you need to get more clients. When you need business, you need to get more clients. It doesn't matter. You always need to be looking to get more business. And there's three reasons for that. Number one, you want to get more business. You want to be able to have more options to choose from. You want to get better business. You want to get the possibility of getting higher margin clients, clients that respect you, that appreciate you, that FedEx you the check, and eventually get all the business. You want to get all the business from that client prospect. Now, in theory, of course, if it's a large Fortune 500 company and if you just don't have the resources to handle all their searches, it's just an example that you want to be the first one that they think of when there's a need. So think of it like this, more, better, all. You want to get more business, better business, and eventually all the business. That's why you should always be marketing. The number one concept where marketing always starts with is a phrase that was developed in the 1960s called the unique selling proposition. That's where it all starts. When I consult to people, so for example, tomorrow I'm consulting with the search firm here in North Carolina. We're going to look at the unique selling proposition, the sustainable advantage. That's kind of my model of analyzing a search firm's practice before we begin to make recommendations on what changes we should make to the sales strategy. So the one thing we look at where we start is the unique selling proposition. That phrase will help to distinguish you from everybody else. It answers this question. What is different about you? But we need to take it a step further. We need to look at what's different about you that nobody else can say. How is that differentiation going to give you an advantage? And how is that differentiation going to help you get more business and steal business away from your clients and have your clients fall in love with you? So it all starts with what's unique. There's a couple ways you can go about this. You can start, there's two avenues actually. You can do your personal uniqueness and your corporate uniqueness. So let's look at a couple of examples of your personal uniqueness. If you came out of the industry, people either came out of HR or management or sales, whatever your previous experience was, there is an element of uniqueness to that. So for example, if you recruit engineers and you used to be an engineer, there's something very unique about that. My new niche, as a lot of you all know, is legal. I didn't practice law. About 80% of all the other legal recruiters are ex-lawyers. So I'm pretty unique in not being a lawyer. I actually look at that as an advantage because my experience for the first 20 years of my life is being a professional sales executive. My uniqueness is my sales expertise. That gives me an advantage over my competitors because I can show my clients through question asking that the number one core competency of a recruiter is to be a professional shoulder tapper, to be able to sell the idea of change to complete strangers in a 6-minute phone call. That is my advantage. So whatever your uniqueness is, we start with what's unique about you personally. It can be on a professional level or it can even be on a personal level. Some people that I've consulted to, one young lady said, well, the only thing I can think of that's unique about me, Scott, is my personality. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, people say that I have an engaging personality. I said, well, let's go with that. We can say that you can get candidates to open up to you because you have an engaging personality. Whatever's unique about you, there's always a reason why it's going to benefit someone else. All we have to do is look at how specifically is it going to do that and to be able to craft a phrase so that quickly we can explain our uniqueness in terms of our client prospect, how it's going to solve their problem, and even help benefit them on a personal level. Some other areas of uniqueness that I found are real interesting are people will say, we have a commitment to completing our assignments, or we're able to gain the trust of candidates. It's not as concrete as my experience used to be fill in the blank. So the way we want to phrase that is, what's unique about me is that I've got a very clear set of core values. I remember I figured this out by accident. Long ago, I read Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the things that he talks about it was either in that book or another program that he did. He says, look at your roles, goals, and values. What are the roles in your life? What are the goals for each one of those? And what are the values for each role in your life? So if you're a father, you've got a certain set of core values for being a father. If you're a recruiter, you've got a certain set of core values for being a recruiter. If you're a volunteer in the community, there's a certain set of core values for that role in your life. So I got real clear on what my core values were. One of my clients, who used to be a candidate who I'd recruited and placed, he called me up, and I love it when an ex-candidate calls me up, or now they're a hiring manager, and he said, Scott, I've got several needs I need for you to fill. And I told him, I said, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. You know, what are some of the issues that you're facing right now? And I went through my standard sales mode, and he said, well, let's cut to the chase. I know you. I feel comfortable with you. What will your fees be? And I told him, I said, well, I charge 30% of first year's compensation. I said, let me just come out and tell you what I charge. And he said, you know what, Scott? Most of the other recruiters are charging half that, 20 to 15%. He said, I'm okay with paying you for that. I have the budget for that. I just want to know what I'm going to get. And I thought, okay, let me see. I can get you better people. First thing out of my mouth, I can get you better people. And he asked a very interesting question, a question that I'd never heard of before that time and I'd never heard since. How are you going to do that? How are you going to get me good people? And I thought, you know, I've been busted. I've never thought about that before. How am I actually going to get them better people than my competitors? I'd never gone through that in my mind before. The only thing I could think of was my uniqueness. I started with my uniqueness. I figured out this model by accident. I said, well, you know what, Roger, the only thing I can think of, actually, I didn't say that. I said, what's unique about me is that I have a very distinct set of core values that I've clearly defined. And because of that, the candidates that I'm talking to, the people that are not looking to move, they trust me. Because of my personal core values, I can develop a quick relationship with a complete stranger in 6 minutes. I can get them to trust me. Because of my core values, they're going to tell me what their hot buttons are on why they want to make a move. I can share those with you so you can make it a better interview. You can sell your opportunity a lot more effectively. Because they trust me, I can find out what's important to them in compensation and share that with you so you know exactly what sort of comp plan to give them. Because they trust me, I can find out what their concerns are, resolve those, and get them to accept the offer the day that they get that and get them to not even think about taking a counteroffer because they trust me. For that, my fees are 30% of first year's compensation. And he was fine with that. And I thought, hey, that was easy. So the model is, what's unique about you? How is that uniqueness going to translate into a benefit for your client? And in some ways, I think knowing how to do that is even more important than figuring out what your uniqueness is. We can say we're unique because the owner of our firm used to work in pharmaceutical sales. Well, that's one thing. We actually have to connect the dots for our clients. We have to show them step by step by step. Because the owner of our firm worked in pharmaceutical sales, we can get you better candidates. There's three reasons for that. Number one, we understand exactly what you're looking for. Number two, we know exactly what their concerns are. And number three, we can develop a very quick rapport with them because the owner of our firm came out of pharmaceutical sales. And for that, our fees are higher than your competitor. And for that, our fees are higher than our competitors. So when you learn how to articulate your value, which is really the only reason why someone is going to pay you a higher fee than somebody else, it all starts with that uniqueness. Now, the second part of that is your sustainable advantage. When you look at this uniqueness, you have to look at it as something that's going to sustain your growth and sustain your client development activities, regardless of what your competitors do. For some people, it's a relationship. It might be industry knowledge, whatever it is. You need to look at how this uniqueness is going to give you a long-term advantage. And like I said, it's one thing to figure out what your uniqueness is. It's something else to articulate that in terms of a client benefit. When we do that, we have to explain it not just in terms of the benefit, but the benefit of the benefit and how it personally benefits that client prospect. And that's why one thing ties in with everything else. You can't just pick up the phone and start calling. You have to understand how all these parts fit together. What I mean by that is asking those right sales questions, understanding what the implications of positions not being filled will be on the personal level to your client. When you understand what that is, now you can start selling effectively. Because like I always say at any of the seminars I do, the very first cardinal rule of human behavior is that people only do what's in their own best interest. This next part of the podcast is an interview that I did with the late Bill Brooks several years ago. Bill was an amazing sales professional. He was one of the leading thought leaders in the world of sales. He was a sales trainer, an author who'd written dozens of sales books, and a very successful entrepreneur. Built a very successful sales training company out of Greensboro, North Carolina. But most of all, to me, he was a mentor and he was a friend. Listen as you hear some of Bill's timeless insights on how you can sell at margins higher than your competitors.
Bill has been a sales trainer for many decades. He's consulted to companies, you know, just pick a company, name one, and they're probably a client. He's authored over 17 books. The most recent is The New Science of Selling and Persuasion, which is the number one business bestseller on BarnesandNoble.com. This October, his next book will be out called How to Sell at Prices Higher Than Your Competition. And that's exactly what Bill and I are going to talk about today, specifically, how does that relate to the executive search and the direct hire staffing business? Bill, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to talking with you.
You bet. And Bill, let me just get right to the point. How does one sell at prices higher than their competition?
Well, it's going to sound pretty simple, like anything else, it's simple but not easy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask a price that's higher than your competition.
Wow.
Okay, and that really is much deeper than it sounds, because fundamentally what we've discovered is that there are two fundamental reasons why salespeople or organizations tend not to ask a price or a fee that's higher than the competitors.
Why is that?
One is they become what we call wowed.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is they crack.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now wow is simply this. You really don't believe that the fee you're charging or the price you're charging is really worth what it is you're asking.
Right.
And so consequently, if you're wowed, it's going to become very, very obvious to that prospect that you're wowed. And let me give you two or three ways that salespeople communicate that they're wowed. One is that they tend to use a modifier on their fee, like our usual fee, our regular fee, our standard fee is. The other one is they use setup statements. They use things like, tell me, where do we need to be? We really want your business. So what happens is what that communicates clearly is that they are wowed by the fee, wowed by the price, and that's purely a psychological issue on their part. So consequently, that's issue number one. Issue number two is that they crack. And crack simply means this. When someone says, boy, that's an astronomical fee, or I can't pay that fee, or why is your fee so high? What do you think the first thing they do is? They retreat and they agree to what? Drop the fee or drop the price or drop the charge.
Right.
And so you've got to be able to deal with that. In fact, we have a little guide that we use. It's actually in the book. And what it lists 33 ways not to crack.
Wow.
33 things to say, do, act on when someone says your price is too high.
What are a couple of examples of those, Bill?
Let me give you one of them. Corroboration selling is extremely powerful, particularly if you've got some very high visibility clients and that perhaps are in the same segment. So what you may want to do is have letters of validation, letters of testimony, social proof from those people. And now what happens is, let's say that I'll make one up that everybody knows, General Motors, for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll say, well, here, let me show you what General Motors has to say about our service. And then you say, you know, they must be buying for us for some reason. They certainly aren't stupid.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So now what goes through someone's mind is, well, if the brand leader or somebody who's well-respected buys and pays this fee or pays this price, I must be stupid not to do that, okay?
Right.
So it's this corroboration. Another way is what we call, this is interesting, we call this the so response. And actually, you can utter virtually anything. You can say, huh? What do you mean? Why do you say that? So say to me, for example, Scott, say, boy, your fee is awfully high.
Bill, your fee is just way too high.
So?
Then I got to think of something.
Yeah. But what happens is, here's what really happens. They say, well, you know, I just don't think that it's worth that. Now, think about this for a minute. what this does is this actually gives you an opportunity to actually redo your sales presentation.
That's pretty cool. That's a good trick.
What they're really saying to you is, okay, I want to have an opportunity to present this. I want you to have an opportunity to present this to me again. Now, what you then do is you say, oh, boy, this is why this is so good. Let me give you a third one. We call this the exactly why response. Okay, that's right. The exactly why response. So Scott, say to me, boy, your fee is awfully high.
Bill, your fee is awfully high.
That's exactly why you should consider doing business.
That's right. That's so beautiful. That works.
See, so it's the exactly why, it's the so response, and it's corroboration selling. And there are about 30 other different ways to respond.
Well, keep going. Let's hear some more.
Well, one of the most interesting strategies to respond is trying to find out who really is making the decision. But part of it is to understand the words that they use. For example, if someone says, we believe that your product or your service is exactly the same as anyone else's, they've classified it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what will happen is you have to understand that people will try to get your fees lowered by two things, intimidation or denigration. In other words, what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to scare you into believing that they'll buy from someone else. And the other thing is that they'll try to denigrate. They'll say something like, well, I've checked with people in the field, and they don't think that your service is much better than anybody else's.
So how would you respond to something like that?
What you need to determine is how do you differentiate what you have? Because if you don't have a competitive advantage, then anything they say is going to be true. See, something – let me give you an example, Scott. Let's say that I said to you, this is a glass and this is a glass. Okay?
Right.
You would agree they're a glass, right?
Right.
Then I say, this is a glass and this is a cup. What can you say?
Well, they look like glasses to me.
Okay. One is a glass and one is clearly a what?
A glass, right?
No, a glass and a cup.
Okay.
So I say, this is a glass, this is a cup. What are you going to say? This is a glass, this is a cup. Now watch this one. This is a glass, and we classify this second one as a glass, even though you know it's a cup.
Okay.
The truth is, you can't argue with me.
Right.
So what they'll try to do is they'll say, we classify this the same way. In other words, what they're trying to subtly say to you is it's the same product, but it isn't the same product.
So it's all about the language that you use.
Yeah, a lot of it is the language. Here's another example. What if I said to you, you're out of here, I'm not going to pay that price. Now listen to the second one. You know, I would throw you out of here if I couldn't get a better price. I've used the subjunctive the second time. The first is the declarative. The declarative means you're out of here. If they use the subjunctive, like, I would if I could, if you would, I would do this, you see?
Right.
What that means is they either don't have anybody else, they can't buy from anybody else, listen to this one, or they can't buy from anybody else. You say, well, you said they can't buy from anybody else twice. Now think about this. I won't buy from anybody else. What does that mean? I want to buy from you. I can't buy from anybody else. Maybe nobody else will sell it to them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't buy from anybody else. Maybe my boss told me that I really shouldn't buy from anybody else. So what happens is I'm not going to be declarative. I'm going to be subjunctive. And if you hear the subjunctive, you're not getting thrown out of there. Hang in there with your price.
That means you still got a chance.
Yes. So hang in there with your price. The real truth of the matter is if you take a look at all of this stuff, one of the things that we talk about a lot in the book is a simple concept. And here's the concept. Let's say you have a 25% margin on what it is you sell. If you reduce your price by 10%, you've got to sell between 35 and 40% more of what you sell to have the same net.
That's right.
So the name of the game is you have got to be able to substantiate. It's all margin. It's not volume. And really, really effective salespeople know how to sell volume, and they know how to sell margin. Really good ones do both of those well. I would rather take someone who perhaps suffers a little bit on the volume if the margin side is better, simply because it really does make sense. Here's another intriguing thing, Scott. Would you agree with me that we train our customers how to buy from us?
That's right.
Let me give you a good example. When you were younger and you were looking for a place to live, did you ever rent?
Yes.
When you rented, did you negotiate the rent?
Yes.
Okay. You are probably one of about 10 in 100. Okay. We've done this for years. About 10% of the people will say they do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, have you ever bought a car?
Yes.
Did you negotiate the price of the car?
Yes, I did.
100 times out of 100 we'll find people that will do this. Is the negotiation rate higher in cars or rental property?
Yeah, probably cars.
Who do you think taught you to do that?
Yeah, that's right. The industry did.
Yeah, here's another thing they taught. Go the next time you get in your car, turn on the radio and listen to an auto commercial. Okay? What's the dealer going to say?
Lowest price.
Yeah, so what have they taught you?
They've taught you that we can be bought. We
yes.
can be we put us in the same category as every other commodity you buy.
Yeah. So here's what happens. It's the decommoditization.
Mm-hmm.
And there are really only five things that you can sell on as it relates to this higher price. You can sell on quality, service, delivery, promotion, salespersonship, branding, or you can sell on price. And I'll tell you, if you're going to sell on price, the first chapter of the book is interesting. It's called Most Employers Go Broke, and Yours Can Too.
Wow. What are some examples that you cite or things that you've personally seen where a company that just sells on price eventually has to fold up?
All right. I'll give you the best example of all, the airlines. There are three factors, Scott, that are always at play when an individual's income or a business are gone down the chute. And let me give you the three.
Mm-hmm.
One is that their margins decrease. Number two is that their labor as a percentage of gross sales increases, labor costs. And third, their sales increase. So let me give you an example. You fly a fair amount, as do I.
Right.
Have you seen most of the airlines are pretty full?
Yeah, they are.
They're full. Are they selling cheaper seats?
It's gotten a little bit better, but, you know, you still got to hunt for them.
Mm-hmm. But they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Secondly, are you seeing that they're having labor problems?
Yes.
Okay, and now they're asking for all kinds of concessions from the labor union.
That's right, $8,000 bonuses for flight attendants that have early retirement, stuff like that.
Okay, now the third part is, are they selling more seats?
I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was on six flights last week. On three of the flights, they asked for volunteers to get off. And they were going to give them bonuses to get off. So think about this. Their margins have what? Dropped.
Right.
Labor as a percentage of the cost of doing business has gone where? Up. And they're selling more seats, so they have greater volume.
So it means they're going to go out of business quicker?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, the only ones that have broken that so far have been Southwest because their labor costs are lower. They don't use the hubs. They have one type of plane. They don't have to do cross-training. They've driven the infrastructure cost down. You take the other airlines, like a Delta, United, U.S. Air, it takes them 10 to 15 people, all union, to get them up in the air, okay? And so consequently, I don't know if Delta's union or not, but the rest of them are. So consequently, it's a more expensive venture.
So, Bill, let's say someone is listening to what you're saying, and they say, I'm a believer. I want to go out there and raise my fees. How do they do that? Do they just go ahead and say, it's time to raise my fees? Or what's their typical strategy to be able to do that? And then secondly, what would be a step-by-step formula that you would recommend to someone so that they can go ahead and execute and start raising their fees?
Okay, very good question, Scott. Here's the first answer. No, you can't just go out there and quadruple your fees. People will say, what in the world is this? The thing to remember is that price cutting or low price selling is a self-inflicted wound.
Right.
Okay, so consequently, what you need to be able to do is you need to be able to take this thing up in stages. And in order to take break it up in stages. You've got to find some sort of unique differentiator that decommoditizes what you do.
Okay, and what would be a couple of examples of that?
Let's say that you deliver more qualified talent more quickly.
Okay.
That what you do is more digital.
Right.
That you guarantee in a way that's different from anyone else in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
That you are in a position to take out a wider net and give them more candidates at less cost.
Okay.
That you have an extensive array of talent that you can pull from more quickly to be able to do this. That you specialize in a certain industry. That you specialize in a certain job type. And then what you've got to be able to do is to deliver this. Now, here's the interesting thing that happens. If you do not do this over time, you will have a lot of business, but here's what will happen. The people who don't pay much of a fee will refer you to more people who don't want to pay much of a fee, and then you're going to be known as the mooch provider.
Right, right.
And that's when it becomes this downward cycle. My co-author in this book, Dr. Larry Steinmetz, was the original architect of all of this, and I've kind of taken it with him, and we've taken it to a whole new level. He first wrote the material back in the late 80s, and consequently, we've really taken it to another whole level at this point. So he's really the original architect of this, and I'm kind of a student of his, and have been that for about 15, 16 years. The real thing is there are lots of strategies that we talked about, but the antecedent part of it is this wowing and cracking and then discovering what your real unique advantage is. You've got to have a unique advantage that allows you to charge a higher fee. Now, all that having been said, Scott, this is the most intriguing thing. What do you think is the one thing that will always allow you to charge a premium dollar for your services?
Anything that you can show would give them a quicker return on the investment or a greater return on your investment compared to your competitors.
Okay, I wish it was that exotic. You know what it is?
What's that?
On-time delivery.
Okay.
So you know what that means? That means everything from the beginning to the end. If you're going to call somebody at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, you call them at 9 o'clock.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because in our industry, when someone has an opening, there's usually an expiration date attached to that. There's an open position that they have to get filled by a certain finite period of time. So you're saying that if we focus on that, if we can qualify our prospects and say, when do you need someone to show up in this position? You know, what would happen if you didn't find the right person? What would happen 6 months from now after that you found out that you hired the wrong person? You know, if we can kind of find out what that nerve is and jump up and down on it a little bit.
And if you can deliver on-time delivery every time, you're going to be ahead of the game.
Interesting.
Now, here's the other part of it. Every part of the search process, anything you commit to has to be committed to with a time frame and accomplished within that time frame, because that breeds confidence. Now, confidence breeds confidence, breeds confidence, breeds confidence. Then you fill the position by the date you say you're going to do it. Boom. You do that three or four times. Now you have people saying to you, it's timely, it's timely, it's timely. You get them to corroborate. Your fees can go higher because now you're known as the on-time deliverer of high-quality talent. So it's faster, easier, and resistance-free to get it done. You see
right.
what happens?
Right, right.
Now you've separated yourself, and this on-time delivery is part of that whole twist. And I don't care whether it's a service, whether it's an applicant, whether it's a product, on-time delivery is essential to premium fees and prices.
So let's say that you've figured out what your unique selling proposition is, you know, your unique value. You have been able to shape your presentation to focus on the needs of your client and show how the on-time delivery is going to serve them, and that you can do that. You've got testimonial letters that say, thanks for getting us great candidates. Not only that, thanks for getting us when we needed them. What would be the tactics as far as selling that way to a prospect? How would you recommend, Bill? If you were in our industry, what would you do?
The first thing I would try to do is I would try to brand myself as the on-time supplier. See, what you just said was absolutely right on target. You know, you gave me high-quality candidates, and you did it in a timely manner, and every date was met or exceeded, something to that extent.
Right.
That you become the on-time deliverer of high-quality talent.
Mm-hmm.
Now that becomes a differential advantage. Now that's a standard against which you have to perform. See, what I would do is I would offer some sort of a risk reversal to it. You know, we deliver you on time or this placement is free.
Wow.
See, if you have the guts to do that, now what happens is you start to say, all right, I've differentiated myself a little bit. And who's taking the risk?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, you're taking the risk. See, all things being equal, people want the least risk vendor.
Right.
So you remove the risk, now all of a sudden, you know what? Maybe they'll charge you, you can charge a little bit more. And it's all about margin. I mean, heck, you could charge 15% more based upon what it is you do, and you can sell 40% less and still have the same net.
Mm-hmm. So if someone did say, yes, we want to work with you, and they start giving you about rebuttals and all the things that you want to overcome the objections, how often do you recommend that someone would actually practice this in their space with all their colleagues?
What would happen is most of the time, after you have built trust, asked the right questions, qualified the buyer, presented your solution, corroborated your claims, presented your fee, if you've done that right, you don't get too much resistance. But real sophisticated, intelligent, well-trained buyers are taught to always complain about the fee.
Sure.
So expect it. It doesn't mean that you've wowed. It just means that's what their job is. So knowing that, you need to know how to respond.
So when a recruiter tells someone what the fee is and they say, 30%? You're kidding me. We should anticipate that they've read Roger Dawson's book, that they've gone to all the Kara's negotiating classes. They've gone to all that stuff, and that's kind of SOP, standard operating procedures for how they deal with every vendor.
Mm-hmm. That makes no difference what you're selling. They've been taught to do that. So what that means is you need to be taught how to respond to that. Now, the bottom line to it is you don't need to have a lot of different ways to do that. I can tell you this. If you just say my fee is 30%, you're dead anyway.
Right.
Now, watch this one. Well, let me tell you what we're going to provide you for our fee. We're going to do the search. We're going to take a look at the talent. We're going to screen the people. We're going to help you to define the job parameters. We're going to prepare these folks to be able to understand what they're getting into. We'll coach you all the way through the process. Now, for that, it's a 30% fee. But let me tell you what else we do. We guarantee on-time delivery of that requisition, filling that job to your satisfaction. But that's not all. We will also give you the parameters on how to coach, manage, mentor, and bring out the best from this candidate because we have a deep understanding of the people we provide.
Extra added value.
All of that for 30%. See
yeah.
what I've done is I've told you benefit, 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 fee, benefit, benefit. See, knowing how to present the fee is critical. One of the worst things that happens to people is they get a premature price question and they answer it. So let's say early on to me, what's your fee going to be for this? Just ask me that question.
What's your fee going to be for this, Bill?
Well, we've got a fee that's based upon what we have to do, how long we have to provide. I can tell you it's going to be the highest fee you've ever seen in your life if we don't deliver the right person. What I'd like to do is ask you a few questions, and then give you the specifics, and I'll give you the fee right to the penny.
No. What's your fee? Just tell me what it is right now. What is it?
Okay. We've got a fee that can range anywhere from 30 to 40% based upon what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is called bracketing.
Right.
Now, what I tried to do is I tried to defer the fee.
Right.
But you notice when I bracketed, I gave my standard fee as the lowest number.
Yeah, the contrast principle. Now at 30%, wow, you're going to do all that and it's only 30%.
Yeah. See, what I don't want to do is to say 20% because what will they expect?
Yeah, that's what they expect.
Expect 20. So I want to bracket it. All right. Now, by the same token, what I absolutely want to be sure of is that I know what to say when they do give me heat. I can use the so response. Here's another response I can do. Say, you know, boy, your fee is high. Say that to me. Your fee is
your
high.
Your fee is high.
Maybe our fee is high. And shut up.
Bill, I am motivated to get on the phone and call some clients now. I got to try this out.
Well, what happens? Let me finish the thought here. I know you're running out of time, but here's the way it works, Scott. It's pretty simple. When you say, I guess our fee is high, you're going to get one of several responses. One's going to be, one that I got recently, you know what the fellow said to me? He said, I guess you have a good reason for it.
And what did you say?
And I said, well, you know, I've told you everything. And he said, okay, that's fine. He said, I just thought I'd ask you.
It takes a lot of moxie to be able to do that, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Another thing that you'll get is they'll say, well, I just think it's too high. And I say, okay, I can understand, but let me go over again what that includes. Well, I still don't want to pay that. All right, well, we do have a slightly less fee structure, but if we do that, we have to eliminate this, 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 and this. And you know what you need to know? The fear of loss is more powerful than the joy of gain. You know what they'll say? Oh, I don't want to take those out, so they'll agree to pay you the 30%.
Bill, you've got great material. I've been to your website. You've got a lot of free resources. How many articles do you think you have on your website?
Oh, we must have 150, 180 different articles. We've got all kinds of products. We have links over to one of our other sites, which is thewordsthatsell.com.
So, okay.
The exact words to use with customer types.
So tell me about the resources that if someone wants to get on the Internet right now and they can access something for free, what would be some of those places they could go to?
They should go to the www.thebrooksgroup.com.
Okay.
We also have salestraininguniversity.com, salesmanagementuniversity.com, academyforsalessuccess.com. There's a whole host of things up there. There's a little section there that says free resources. Just click on it, and you'll see you can get all kinds of things.
What was the other one, wordsthatsell.com?
Wordsthatsell.com.
Terrific. Bill Brooks, and also if people want to buy any of your 17 books, they can go to your website or go to any bookstore.
All on our website. The New Science of Selling and Persuasion is in all the bookstores. I have another book called Sales Techniques with McGraw-Hill. That's in the bookstores. We have another book coming out in the fall called Perfect Phrases, Words to Use in Every Sales Situation. And that'll be coming out in the late fall as well. So we've got lots of stuff, and it's always fun learning about it.
Bill Brooks, thank you so much for your time. You're a great friend and a mentor, and I appreciate all of your wisdom.
I appreciate the opportunity.